This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Nora. Thanks so much for being with us today. Researchers from Mount Sinai School of Medicine and the Harvard School for Public Health recently published a paper in The Lancet Neurology called Neurobehavioral Effects of Developmental Toxicity. Their research was focused on the disruptive effects that industrial chemicals can have on human neurological development. Cognitive impairments, such as lowered IQs, can be the result of exposure to these chemicals. The article asserts that the number of chemicals recognized to have impacts on brain development have doubled in only 7 years. Research scientist Matt Dellinger, who's with the Medical College of Wisconsin, is immersed in related research. He focuses on health disparities and risks associated with contaminants, particularly among Native American tribes and rural populations. Dellinger told WUWM's Susan Benz that one of the neurotoxicants discussed in the review, mercury, is still a prominent contaminant in the Great Lakes, despite long-standing awareness of its health risks.
It basically goes hand in hand with carbon dioxide emissions because it's an industrial pollutant and it's a global pollutant. So if they're burning coal in China, not only are we getting those excess greenhouse gases, we're getting excess mercury, and it's global. It goes everywhere. So goes the fossil fuels, goes the mercury. In the case of PCBs, which is another chemical that they discuss, and again, they review other studies that look into these types of observational studies I describe. That's a chemical that is produced as part of manufacturing. It was used in transformers. I think it's a story a lot of people would be familiar with. And PCBs were banned because of, for similar reasons to mercury, they found out that it was had these very negative health consequences, and that it accumulates in the food chain, particularly the fish, and it gets, even if it's at low levels in the environment, like mercury and like a lot of the other and like a lot of the other contaminants that they discussed. It will accumulate up to higher, like fish, for example, and then suddenly you have a dose that's biologically meaningful. So they banned it. And our research with the tribes shows that those bans worked. So when those chemicals were disallowed from production, they went down in the Great Lakes. And that's the kind of, actually, that's the kind of message we're trying to show. The same seems to be true for certain flame retardants. When they ban them, they go away. So that would be one point that I would make, is that when that discussion gets to the point of, okay, we're really sure that PCBs, for example, are bad for your health. We're pretty sure that everyone's getting exposed at meaningful levels because of bioaccumulation and because it gets out, because it's pervasive and persistent. So we should ban it. So they ban it and it goes away, kind of, over a period of time. The exhaustive exposure for the humans for PCBs and for mercury, two of the contaminants that we're focused on in the study, the primary source is through fish. That's generally accepted to be the primary way that it gets into the humans. Now, the source, industrial source of mercury is coal runoff. It'll leach out of freshly flooded soils. It's everywhere. And also taconite mining, which is an issue in Wisconsin now. That produces more mercury. And so that's all the different areas that the chemical originates from. The way it gets to us, in the case of mercury and PCBs, is generally through fish. In contrast to PCBs, for example, which have been banned and which have been dredged out of like Green Bay and the Fox River, for example, mercury in the fish is increasing, according to our data, because we still burn coal. Other countries still burn coal, and as I said, it's a global contaminant. A lot of the mining industry in Minnesota has contributed to global outputs of mercury, and if we open more mines, for example, in Wisconsin up by the Bad River watershed, that will contribute more mercury. With certain contaminants, we can ban their use. We could ban certain pesticides. There are other I didn't mention, but there are other pesticides that are decreasing. DDT is decreasing in the Great Lakes, although it's still used elsewhere. Mercury is a little bit more complicated because it's related to a lot of the energy-based activities and mineral extraction activities that we do in society. It's obviously important for industry. And so it's important to note that regulations, A, they can work depending on the chemical, and some of the chemicals discussed in the paper, simply banning them through the proper discussion and legislation probably is the right answer. Mercury, there's some trade-offs that need to be considered. The best example I have is the taconite mine that's being proposed to be put in northern Wisconsin. And so taconite processing of the pellets releases mercury from the minerals, from the ore and the rock that they've gathered, and it also increases the need for energy. So the energy required to process all those pellets has been estimated to be, I think it was double or even quadruple, what the local Ashland power plant can produce. So they're going to have to increase that output somehow. And oftentimes that output is in the Midwest and in America is with coal. And so coal is another source of mercury. And so it's complicated. You know, it's complicated. It's a global contaminant. It's vexing. That's why mercury is so vexing, because it's always going to track with burning of fossil fuels. And it's also, in terms of exposure, mercury is going to track with omega-3 fatty acids, which is actually counteracts a lot of the negative effects of mercury. In fact, there are some papers out there that use very similar logic that is cited here to look at those IQ points, look at visual memory recognition in children, and take the increase of score from eating fish and getting omega-3 fatty acids in the children and in the mothers, and then the decrease in score from the mercury contamination that is obviously associated. And there are some interesting calculations that come out of it. The Connecticut Department of Health Services has recently come out with an interesting quantification where they'll show how basically shark, because it's low in omega-3s but higher in methylmercury because it's a shark, it's the top of the food chain, it's not worth it in terms of your visual memory recognition score or your IQ score. You end up in the negative because of your mercury risk compared to the benefit of omega-3s. So this is added layer of complication where these are important sources of nutrition, but if we undermine them by contaminating them with this pollutant that comes out of almost, you know, to exaggerate a little bit, everything we do and then goes everywhere, it requires a discussion that is even larger than should we just ban XYZ. It's a discussion that is, do we support more mining? Do we want more power plants? Do we want to pay the price today of trying to be more efficient and reduce our emissions of these things to try to prevent the loss of IQ points in the future? And that's really the core argument that is being made in this paper.
In this review, the two authors point to several recommended strategies to address the problem. What did you make of those?
In the context of the paper, it sounds incredibly straightforward, of course. So they lay out their argument here. So essentially what they're saying is we have these six well-known neurotoxicants. Here's all the different ways you can slice it, and you can say on average in these populations, if you have this much, you can expect this much loss of IQ points, this much cost to society, and it all works very great within that context. So in a sense, yes. The specific recommendations are have a clearinghouse for studying these things, you know, because the next step they're saying is that there are thousands, tens of thousands, not just thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands even maybe. We don't really know. Chemicals that are out there that we're exposed to every day, and there's a lot we're never going to know about our relationship to these chemicals in terms of our health. And at a certain point, you have to say, well, A, we need to have a proactive approach to studying it and to identifying which are going to be the really nasty chemicals that probably should be banned. And B, we need to maybe think about this a little bit differently in terms of, you know, do we want to treat these new products or these chemicals or even the ones that have been around forever, do we want to treat them as innocent until proven guilty? So obviously I'm alluding to the trade-off between economy and jobs and pollution, which is going to be, I think, the kind of the backdrop for all of these discussions. And it's you can't really dance around it. You can only dance around it for so long before it basically it's really all a societal discussion about how concerned are we about these IQ points that we're going to lose, or, you know, are we more concerned with the economic gains? Now, another way you could put it as a risk assessor is you could consider that in some cases, perhaps, when an activity goes forward that is likely to result in pollution, the gains for that activity are much higher for those who for certain folks who are promoting it have a lot to gain, whereas those in the area, such as perhaps the Native Americans who use these watersheds in the in North America, or any of us who rely on the environment, the risks to the others are maybe a few IQ points. Maybe there's a lot of IQ points, but that maybe that pales in comparison to how much money can be made in certain circumstances.
Matt, you've said that despite the fact that you study, this is your field of study, you're a parent, you're a dad, you have a couple of children, that you struggle with choices and decisions for your family.
Yeah, well, so the most striking aspect of this to me, of this field that I'm supposedly an expert in, I will sit down and read a paper like this, and I study this day in and day out. I do it professionally, and I'll look at the original sources, the original studies. I'll see them make a claim about IQ points or about dollars, and I'll think, wow, that's very interesting. I wonder how they calculated that. I'll go and I'll look, and I do have the expertise to understand that. At the end of the day, it's still very, very difficult for me to know how to protect my kids. I can go to the store and I have a pretty good idea of which fish to buy. I know that I want fish for my children. It's important for them to develop their brains with the correct building blocks, and fatty acids are important. And but I know that fish can be contaminated. And it's hard for me, even I can't even imagine if someone didn't study this all day, how they would navigate this and really be effective in managing their exposures. And in fact, that's an area of study I'm interested in, is trying to figure out what behaviors really are protective. Because I suspect that that it's very difficult to come up with protective behaviors to really safeguard ourselves. So if the experts are confused and the experts are worried about protecting their own kids, it's a little bit unnerving.
Matt Dellinger is a research scientist with the Medical College of Wisconsin. He specializes in human health and ecological risk assessment. He spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz. You can find a copy of the Mount Sinai Harvard School for Public Health review that Dellinger spoke about on our website, wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we'll visit the sixth floor of the University Club when we join Wisconsin foodie and Lake Effect contributor Kyle Cherik for a discussion of all the great food trends in the state. That's coming up next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.